Hi, my name is Nariva Shepherd.
This is Justin Arnett Graham.
And this is Terms of Service.
See, that also felt really nice.
It was lovely.
Yeah.
But like I said, we're going to practice on off days moving forward.
Tomorrow morning, 9 a.m.
9 a.m.
And also, it is not 9 a.m. like we have been recording in the past.
Oh, shit, yeah.
So we got a whole thing going here.
The evening.
Yes.
It's after 8 in the evening, and we're here with our friends from Anthropological Podcast.
Yes. Hi,
hello,
friends.
Hello, 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 hello.
Yes, welcome, welcome.
Thank you. We are Anthropological, real-life applications for some very anthropological theories. My name is Kasira Hill. I am your local Chicago graphic designer, anthropologist, bartender, and Gemini. And today, contrary to what's happening outside, we're giving puff, we're giving bundles, we're giving curls,
yes,
we're giving large hair, we're giving ashy elbows.
Ashy elbows.
Ashy elbows.
All the way around, you know?
How does one follow an intro like that? Like this. I'm David Moore, Chicago-based bartender, founder of Spill, and I'm ready for Pride to be over.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Like I mean, I feel you. Like I said earlier, am I even gay this year?
You're not.
I don't know
think
anymore.
So. I don't know.
I didn't go
did
anywhere
they,
for
did
the
Did they
things.
Take you off the newsletter?
I didn't,
listen,
yeah, I didn't see you at the meeting.
Okay, because, so yesterday I had to run for the bus, and it's the fastest I've moved in 2 years. And this morning I woke up and my knee was fucked. And I have exactly one ace bandage, and my cats have like covered it in fur and all this shit. And I gave it to my partner and he looked at it. He looked at me and he was like, I feel like somewhere lesbians are taking something away from you at the state of this ace bandage. And I was like, even a straight cis white man is coming for me. So am I even gay?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Prove well, that's what we're here to talk about today.
Yeah,
is,
that's the
this is an
actual
intervention.
Topic of this entire collaborative episode.
Right. Yeah.
And also, it's like a live recording. There are people here. Hi, people.
Hey,
yeah.
Y'all.
Hi.
Hey.
Oh,
there are
thank
people.
You. Yes, thank you. Thank you
Mom?
So much.
Is that you?
Dad, is that
Dad.
You?
Yes. So, this is so exciting. So, just from Terms of Service, we want to thank Anthropological so much for coming.
Yeah.
And we are so excited to get into the real realities of the hospitality industry. And
give us the topics.
Yeah, like
this.
Not.
What is it?
Yeah, it's.
This
like,
is just the state of the industry.
Yes.
Yeah,
so we're
going to
be
like,
talking about
round
like,
table
at
this
all.
Bitch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes. We are at a long table, but it's fine.
It's okay.
You know?
It could be a round table.
Yeah.
Nobody will
it's
know.
It's a long table.
No one will know. No one will know. So, to begin, this has become tradition. What are your signs? Because Nariba's going to read you to filth. So
I'm not going to read
really,
you to filth.
Okay.
You're a Gemini. You already do that on your own.
Yeah.
Oh.
So.
Yeah, I mean, look, I have something else to say about that. But yeah, I'm a Gemini. I'm a Gemini rising with a Capricorn moon.
How do you exist? How do you walk around in
I'm
the
a,
world?
I'm a unicorn, and my partner has to deal with it. So, you know, he's a Capricorn and has to deal with me being a Gemini and living with another Gemini as well.
Ooh.
So.
All right.
You're the real one.
They're all in the room, and I'm pointing at them.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all good. Perfect.
And you?
David?
So, I am a Leo, and I don't know what the other words that you just said are. So, I rise in the morning, and I sleep in the eve.
Yes.
But I'm a Leo, and I've been told my whole life that that pretty much makes sense for me.
I mean, yes. I immediately feel the urge to know your rising and your moon so that we can be friends because I don't fucks with Leos.
Oh,
specifically
I get that.
Men.
Sure.
But I like you a lot, so just like
thank
don't
you.
Do anything differently.
Wow.
Just be
okay.
You.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
No pressure.
Yeah,
like,
no pressure.
On
zero
like,
pressure
I,
on that.
I really,
yeah.
You know, there's like, you know, everyone has like a sign that like, they don't like see eye to eye on, and I feel because like I'm an Aries, it's
you guys are fighting.
It's like a older sibling, younger sibling situation.
Like okay, yes.
And
yeah,
Leos are like
I don't get
it's
that.
Me. You're like I'm here and it's me, and I'm like I have to do stuff, and your energy level is here and my energy level is here, and I think we just don't like cosmically.
Sure,
but y'all are great. For other people. is just not me.
Wow.
Cosmically, we might not make sense, but comically, I think we do.
Yes. I enjoy you a lot. So I'm going to like put you in the island of Leos that I fucks with.
Yeah. I mean, it's just to be small. Super transparent.
This is a VIP area, it sounds like.
There's three.
Yes.
You're the third one. I'm sorry. There my brother's a Leo. I hate him.
Oh,
so I hope he hears this.
Oh, God.
You're welcome.
Let's unpack. Okay. No, yeah. Let's not. Let's talk about the state of the union.
Yes.
Oh, right.
So...
Y'all.
I would love to know what Anthropological would like to start with.
Yeah.
Because
in this state of the union.
Yeah. Well, we've got some general questions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we can start off with those.
Perfect.
Or we can start off with just some heavy info and a little bit of posing some questions after said given heavy info.
Okay.
So how do you guys feel? Do you want to start off with some general kind of propositions, or do you want to get into the thick of it?
I'm ready for a general proposition.
Okay.
Yes. You don't want to, I can't sing it because we don't have the rights of that song, but Backyard Friends.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
That.
Yes.
Very that.
Yeah.
David, let's start.
Yeah, I'll start. So the first question I'd like to pose to the group is, where do you each feel like you fit into the industry right now? And I ask this from the point of view that I feel like this year has allowed a lot of people to realize that they can still be part of the hospitality industry without having to be on the floor or in the back of house 5 shifts, 6 shifts, 7 shifts a week. Mm-hmm. And so where do you each feel like you belong in this hospitality web?
Nariba.
Okay. I got this. When I close my eyes and imagine going back to a kitchen, I feel a deep panic in my soul. It's like, it's not even like a physical thing anymore. It's like a mental health 110% thing. Like, I do not have the energy in me to work in a place that thinks they already know who they want to be, who they are, and like, the way that they've been doing it has been great, and that's the standard that we're at. I feel like if I had to go back to the food service industry, I would have to like be working from the ground up concept of a place.
Yeah.
But right now, I would much rather focus on finding resources and being a resource to the industry in terms of like mental health conversations, substance use conversations. I feel like it's come full circle where I want to be using my undergrad and my bachelor's of science that I don't fucking use to like be more of a resource to the industry than like put myself through my paces again, because a bitch can't. She tired.
Well said.
Yeah.
Extremely well said. I wonder how I can follow with that. So thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I don't even know where to start. I mean, I'm just like this, I don't know, floating just entity in the industry. I am a creative director for Biko, which is a creative agency that specializes in blending the art and media industries with the hospitality platform, but it's less about a four-walled ecosystem of hospitality. It's the intentionality of it. And that has been, as I feel, a response to just the evolution of the industry and how it's always kind of felt one way.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I wanted to remain a part of it, but I didn't feel like it was sustainable doing it the traditional way. So
I heard that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
David,
very valid.
I'll pose that question to you. Where do you fit into the industry right now?
I would say that I still find myself really battling the like need or desire to work behind a bar and like feel like that is the only way that I am not accepted, but where I feel satisfied, because I feel like, oh, I'm seen, people know that I'm working and that my creative like juices are flowing. And there's this thing as of being a bartender in this industry where it's so reliant on like the PR that comes with it, or this idea of the goal is to become this star tender who's being interviewed for these different publications. Mm-hmm. And
you're a winner, baby.
Yeah. And yes. I feel like I'm always very dissatisfied, and I never understood why. And that was a big reason to start Spill, was to sort of turn that on its head and be like, oh, what if food and beverage media wasn't all about like just promoting the individual for like them working in the industry for X amount of years, but rather like the stories of being in the industry and the experiences and the not so pretty sides. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But recently, after a very long and tumultuous contract negotiation with a newly opening bar that I'm very happy fell through, I was able to take some time to reflect on like what my goals are right now and how do I want to be a part of this industry where I'm not constantly craving that affirmation from like punch.com, which it just like doesn't matter. And I've recently started really enjoying the tea.
Oh.
And I've recently really started to enjoy just like just being present, going to see other people at bars and restaurants and not trying to like, oh, please come visit me behind, I'm here, behind the stick here, slinging this and, what's the other verb? And sucking that. I don't know what the other word was.
Slinging this and sucking that.
My second job. So I am
enjoying... That might be the name of this episode.
please. Make my parents proud. And so I'm enjoying right now just sort of figuring it out and not feeling like I need to have an answer to that quite yet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
My dear Kasira, my Gemini rising, what about you?
I think that, you know, I feel like questions like this sometimes, like we had an episode with Ian where we're like, who are you and what are you doing? And he proceeded to just like
the
list
whole resume.
Out everything he's ever done. So to try not to do that, to give too much context to where I'm at right now, I feel like early on in the industry, I started hustling and busting and working it. Mm. And I got introduced really early on to panels and discussions and brand sponsorships and events and like certain kind of curated things. I feel like I had a few years working hard industry, like just working it, and then immediately kind of got exposure to the side of the industry that's like performative, people with sponsorship trying to have nuanced conversations about quote-unquote complicated or inequitable blah, blah, blah conversations. And I feel like because I got introduced to that really early on in my hospitality kind of experience, that I immediately was like, oh, great, this is the door that I step into where I can blend my anthropological and my, like, academic background and start talking about things like ancestral trauma or cultural appropriation or this, this, and that. So I feel like I'm still in that space without working at the bar. Because when I stepped into these kind of panel discussions or I started curating the multi-day conference in New Orleans with Ashton Berry, Resistance Serve, before I started
doing...
Very much so appreciate Ashton and her knowledge.
Yes, certainly.
You know, flowers to that, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But it's like before... Or as I was doing those things, I was also just straight up trying to make money because a lot of that curation and a lot of that effort was unsubstantiated with a check. So I was still hustling and bustling as like a barback or a bartender or whatever. And I feel like now I'm just in a place where I'm no longer hustling and bustling for a business that I don't own, but I'm still involved in the industry in those same conversations that I was motivated to, you know, step into, that door that I stepped through about, you know, bringing kind of cultural critique and anthropological context into our industry. I'm still in that space. I'm just no longer working as a barback or a bartender until 3 o'clock in the morning and fucking trying to make a check while I'm also creating, you know, incredibly unique and, you know, substantially important content on the other end. I feel like now I'm just in a place where I'm freelancing and doing my graphic design stuff, and that is holding me down, and I'm able to do this other side of the work, especially with Spill and especially with publication stuff and you know, visibility work, et cetera, in the industry, while not having to just go back and be motherfucking exhausted and go work a 11-hour shift at a bar that I don't fucking own.
That part.
Very that. I mean, also very much so a privilege, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, 110%.
We're hustling and bustling out there.
Yeah.
I had like a moment like that in January where I, like last winter, I went back into working in kitchens and I realized that I went from being like an executive chef to like a line cook, and my brain fucking exploded. And I was like, I can't do this. And people were like, you can't fill everyone's cups without filling your own cup. And, like, I feel like that's what I've been trying to figure out is over the last, like, 6 months is, like, what is it exactly that I want to be doing?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, like, people are always saying, like, you are so good at cooking and, like, you, like, your creativity is there and all this stuff. But, like, it doesn't make me happy in a way that it used to in a very long time. Like, if I'm, as soon as I start cooking for other people, it becomes a thing of, like, their expectations, their needs, all of the stuff. And I feel like in a different way, I've still been pouring all of my energy into other people's cups. And I think that that's why, like, with the most recent episode that we had recorded with Laura, Louise Green.
Yes.
I felt like that conversation about being a resource to the industry, especially in a way that, like, people are opening up to wanting to know other options.
Right.
Whereas, like, 2 or 3 years ago, people were like, you're being, like, literally a pussy because you can't go out and drink with us after work, or you don't want to do drugs until, like, 5 o'clock in the morning.
Well, because,
like,
it becomes hazing.
I'm tired.
It becomes hazing.
Yeah.
I have other things to do also.
Yeah.
Like, I would be literally barbacking and being like, hi, I need to take these days off, et cetera, et cetera. Not that this work is less important than the other, but, like, I have a conference to manage, and, yeah, I'm here as a barback, but, like, please believe
but
that
also,
I have other things
also,
going
on. That's none of the goddamn business on that either. You know, it's always been, in my experience, it's always been you have to essentially provide some sort of dissertation as to why you can't work. And it's like, that is real.
Yeah.
And that is just something that since the shift in the industry, it should be a really important topic of overall wellness and not just be like, oh, well, it's a badge of honor to, you know, work yourself into the fucking ground.
Be exhausted all the goddamn time.
All the goddamn time.
I want to shift gears just a little bit and pose another question, because it feels like we're kind of talking about, we're tap dancing around the fact that our industry is very raggedy as fuck, and there's a lot of nuances that we can unpack there, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But
that's a clinical term, right? Yeah. Raggedy as fuck?
Yeah, I think raggedy as fuck.
That,
like,
was the clinical term.
Generally
for it,
speaking, that could apply to a whole lot of things. That could apply to, you know, tipping, inequity, unsafe environments, generally speaking, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But generally speaking, we can agree that the food and beverage industry is raggedy as fuck.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And there are people that are looking to change these things. And I'm tired of hearing that, like, oh, yeah, we're looking to change things. And it's like a white business owner over here just acting the same. Either way.
Mm-hmm.
Our industry is raggedy as fuck. I'm curious to know why each one of us continue in whatever capacity that we are, right? We posed a question on how we identify what we are in the industry right now. Why do we stay creating, building, working, collaborating, changing, and hosting events in our industry? What motivates and brings us to continue to participate in an industry that we can all admit and actively try to dismantle that is raggedy as fuck?
I can start.
Yeah, you go.
Please, somebody start.
Yeah, because what keeps me attached to the industry is literally because it should make people feel as good as they are, right? Mm-hmm. But the cost of it is, it's just so on a spectrum. So I believe that this sort of work and individual work that is committed to the creativity of the industry helps it become more equitable.
Yes.
Because the industry is so open-ended, and when you look at these restaurant groups, when you look at these brands that always like to be industry adjacent because they want to benefit off the backs of the work of the industry, but they don't want to support it where they should, it always comes back around to making sure that it's people at the end of the day, it's community at the end of the day, and going off the fact to where it is so open-ended, it allows you to rub shoulders with literally anyone.
Yeah.
Anyone.
I mean, we already talked about, we mentioned Ashton earlier, but like one of the main things that I took away from listening to Ashton was the fact that hospitality, food and beverage, sits at the forefront of human interaction.
Yeah.
And even in that affirmation of that being said out loud by this amazing, knowledgeable Black woman in the industry, I'm like, yeah, it really does sit at the forefront of human interaction. And that human interaction is what I yearn for, and that what a lot of people yearn for.
Yeah.
So I totally hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
Because that interest and that vibe and that investment is really at the root of it, human interaction, I feel like.
Absolutely. And I also feel that if you aren't interested in doing community work and community building, then there should be no room in the hospitality space.
Yeah, you're the one making it raggedy as fuck.
Absolutely.
Yeah, probably.
Absolutely. And then you're in this ivory tower making these decisions off the backs of everyone else, but knowing that the effects of your decisions will never touch you.
Yep.
Because you're so far removed from the consequence of your decision.
Right. How do you feel?
I just went in, sorry.
Very frequently said to the dudes that I worked with, like, social work, the original form of social work was feeding people.
Mm-hmm.
Literally. And those things have been hand in hand this entire time because it's a source of comfort. And, like, I keep wanting to bring change to the food service industry because I've worked with, like, older people who this was like their saving grace. And it's like, how could this be something that saved you? And like three generations in the meantime, we have like a bunch of condescending assholes that put glory before all else. And they don't know how to communicate with their staff that's making their glory possible. And it's like, I think a lot of that is because of the hazing and the frat boy culture that has been going on for so long and unchecked, because most of the places that I've worked in, because they're like Michelin level places, they don't have human resources. And it's like, who are you supposed to talk to when your boss is being a creep?
Yeah.
Who are you supposed to talk to?
And that system protects those creeps just like it does in other systems as well. But even, I mean, I've only worked in a single industry, right? So, like, very much so that.
Yeah. It's just like, I want people to know that they have, like, a voice and that they can be heard and that you don't have to, like, sell your whole soul to be someone or be a part of this industry. And, like,
yes.
I don't know. The other part of it is I kind of hate that cooking shows exist because they have made this even more of a thing. Like, they've made, like, looking at the culture around the food service industry and, like, the lifestyle of, like, beverage reps and, like, all this stuff, they're making it into this, oh, my God, this is, like, some reality show thing.
Right.
But you're in it every day, and you're like, this shit is raggedy.
Yeah,
it's
raggedy.
Fuck.
So I have to say,
David, why
this
do you stay?
Yeah, so I still really like. I love it. I get excited. When I go out to eat, when I go out to drink, I
love that.
I
shit.
Can acknowledge,
yes,
obviously.
It's like, this is
you
my time.
You said it. The elephant in the room, the white elephant in the room. So for me, a big part of it was watching. When I started working in the Chicago hospitality scene, my mom started a job where she was traveling a lot and solo dining out a lot.
Oh.
And she would talk about how she was treated as a solo diner and as being like a woman of a certain age. And I also felt like her size was part of it, because I feel like women of a different size are all obviously treated very differently in restaurants and bar settings. And I just remember her telling me these stories of just how, like, awful she would feel leaving restaurants when she was a solo diner, because you could just see on the server or bartender's face that they had this idea that she would be a bad tipper for these multitude of reasons. And that was a big wake-up call for me to realize that, first off, being a solo diner in your space is, like, the highest compliment, because it's you're not going there for a meeting with another person. You're not going there because of this, oh, we need to catch up, we need to make a reservation somewhere, so let's just pick somewhere. You're going there because you need to consume, you need to eat, or you need to drink, and you want to do it here, or this is the place where you are going to spend your time and really be with your thoughts. So I find that I find those moments with like solo diners so satisfying and gratifying, and I'm naturally a people person. I mean, we all have different, obviously, backgrounds outside of hospitality. Mine was in theater. And I think it's the same reason why I still have this love for theater, which is this love for humanity. And I love being curious about the human experience. And I think that in theater, you get to read it in plays or see it on stage in a really unique way. And in hospitality, we get to be the ones that are sort of curating that experience with them. Yeah. And I just think it's fascinating. And I think it's like a total... I don't know. I think it's a total privilege to get to be the person that provides food and beverages to people. So, you know, it's still sort of that just like love of the industry for me, although I can still obviously acknowledge the shitty ass stuff with it.
I agree with you, though. I like all those things that you're saying.
Yeah.
Like, I really enjoy when I like make food and I can walk it out to the table and talk to someone, because that's what we do. We curate anniversaries and weddings and like birthday celebrations.
Right.
But when you close your eyes and think about it, how many of those have you been to?
Oh, well, this is a sore subject because I literally miss every single family member's wedding because I can never get off work.
But, exactly.
But also,
that's what I'm
but
saying.
Can I just secretly say
because
that like that doesn't bother me too much?
Oh, shit.
Like, I'm always like, oh, no, I have
You're
to
like,
work.
I'm not working at a bar anymore, but I'm still just like, man, I can't just
I have
get
to
off.
Work.
I just can't get off work.
Real Housewives of Beverly Hills new episode. I can't.
Oh,
miss
my
it.
God. Let us talk about that we'll afterwards that. Because I just finished watching the newest season.
So good. So those are my reasons. And the fact is I think every industry has its issues, and when I was in theater, it had its issues. Mm-hmm. When I hear people that are in the 9-to-5 world and the way that they talk about their jobs, I'm like, I don't want to do that. That sounds like it doesn't sound any more enjoyable than what I'm doing now. And I've met all my closest friends through this industry, and I wouldn't change it for the world. If I wasn't in this industry, I wouldn't have met Kasira, and I feel like she's been a huge just like influence and such a great friend to have in my life that I've learned so much from, and then I've also grown like to have such a genuine friendship with. And so much of this industry has offered, you know, those moments, which is great.
And I'm not friends with David at all.
Okay.
No,
I don't know
amazing
her.
Compliments from David, and it's so lovely because I really appreciate
like, it's
you,
exhausting.
So pause for that. But yes, thank you.
Well, I really like the point of that you just made, David, about the solo diner, right?
So
every time that someone asks about like the journey of Biko or, you know, Garnet or anything like that, I always mention how I got started in the industry. I'm not going to go into the entire story because it takes too goddamn long.
He was working at a place. This dude came in on Wednesdays. It was hump day. He got through the rest of the week because of him.
That's a whole rap.
That was it. Story. That
I
was
thought
it.
You were rapping the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air for
thank
a minute.
You.
I was like,
that was perfect. It's a good
that
day.
Was that was perfect. Yeah. Exactly. And sometimes it's extremely easy to forget the impact of an interaction that you have on someone.
Yeah.
And that is... That's really my
it's affirming.
Honest. It is affirming.
Mm-mm. It's very affirming.
Yeah.
I think that being like as raggedy as it all is and the intertwines of all of it, but like sitting down, going to your job and serving something to somebody where they're excited to get it, like especially the people that come in, like it might be a craft cocktail space, it might be a fast bar space, it might be whatever, but the person that's really invested in just getting a good drink, having a great time, they're chatting with you while they're doing it, and you're making the drink, and you sit down, whether they have time to conversate or not, that energy is incredibly affirming, especially if you're having really great interactions, like back to back to back.
Exactly.
Especially if you're a marginalized person or someone that receives a lot of prejudice from the larger social community of the Americas or what have you, like, you go into work and you get to have really affirming and fun conversations with people that you would like not otherwise have.
Yeah.
That shit is really dope. And I think that is part of the reason why I feel like I stay in the industry. As much as I am not interested in going out behind the bar anymore, I'm interested in still having those affirming,
yeah,
kind of creative and fun conversations with people around drinks. I serve drinks. I used to serve drinks. I love drinking. I love having a swizzle in my hand and having a great conversation with a stranger. Like, that is great. That gives my partner a little bit of levity to not have to have sustained, like, conversations with me all day. Be like, social, 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 social. But, like, I feel like those moments for me are really what kind of holds it down. But at the same time, like, there is so much, and I think this is probably maybe the fourth time that I've said it, so if you're playing a drinking game, like, it's time to drink again. I've said the word nuance.
We did it.
Okay, nuance. Come through, nuance.
There's a lot of nuance in our industry, and I feel like this has been a beautiful space for me to blend my academic, just like Ashton said, forefront of human interaction. I get to blend my academic, and for anyone that doesn't know what anthropology is the study of humans and how humans have come to be.
Yes.
There's cultural anthropology, there's evolutionary anthropology, there's archaeology, and I feel like being an anthropologist as a whole also really kind of motivates me to be interested and talk about the nuanced discussions inside of our industry. So that's what kind of makes me stay, is that I get to be an anthropologist and be a cultural critic and also have in-depth understanding about evolutionary culture and evolutionary theory and see that and explain that and talk about that.
Because the industry is so pliable.
I'm just going to be like,
human interaction.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
110%. Yeah. Like, also,
round of applause.
So much, because my favorite classes were all, why you keep putting any food in front of me? Please move this.
Code switcher.
Jesus.
Jeez. I mean, it looks delicious. Also, for those that are listening, again, this is a live episode coming at you from Blind Barber in Chicago.
Yes.
We legit have people in front of us.
You're fine.
So thank you so much, people. Can you give us some noise so we can... Thank you so much.
It's
so good.
Okay.
It's so
If these
real.
Mics are working the way they're supposed to, you heard nothing.
Oh, stop it.
Silent
right
applause.
Now. We will edit it in.
Yes.
But so, like... My thing is that working in kitchens, I get to use a lot of, like, my social worky background, in a sense. But I think that the problem with the culture as it stands right now in terms of, like, food and beverage.
In terms of service?
People, I know. I was trying
we
not
were so,
to,
my
though.
We were so... close to
I,
it.
I try not to, though. I
hate
it because I hate when you're watching a movie and then they say the name of the movie in it. Like, The Ring, they say that shit like 5 minutes into the movie. I watched it today. But going back to what we were talking about, social work, I feel like I got to test out, sort of, how people will react to, like, a change in the culture as it stands. So, like...
Yeah.
Talking to a bunch of dudes after, like, Anthony Bourdain, we found out that he had committed suicide. It was like all of these guys being very sad about this thing that happened, but not understanding that they are living that same path that's happening. And I think what I hope that we can be doing, just having conversations like these that are broadcasted for people to hear, is changing the way that they intake the information. And, like, one of my favorite things that I learned from, like, anthropology classes in college was, like, part of the reason that humans progress at the rate that we do is because we change before the laws catch up to us. That cognitive dissonance.
Oh.
But, like, they... Yeah. We have the ability to create the change. And I feel like in the food service industry, we have been told that we don't have that ability when we are literally the force.
Yes.
So I think that my drive into being a part of this industry, but, like, on the, like, inner drive in a way, is getting those resources to people who know that there's a better way of doing things and want to be a part of a better way of doing things, but there's no information on how to do that.
Yeah.
I also think that there doesn't need to be like a roadmap to know how to do it. Like, it's okay to figure it out as you go, and you'll make mistakes in it, and you'll learn as, and I think this is a big part of what we talk about with Spill is that, and with Anthropological, is that we're learning out loud, and that we're never going into any of the things that we do or publish saying we are the voice of reason of this subject. It's like, we're here to learn along with all of you. We're just going to take the step to, like you just said, broadcast it so more people can have just another point of view to listen
to. Exactly.
So,
And then also making sure that people feel as if their concerns or their experiences are, like, it's not falling on deaf ears, you know, because a big part of this industry is just the idea of suffering in silence, because you just have to keep doing the thing because of all the pressure that's placed upon you. And I personally have experienced that to where it's like I've done things crazy out of character because of a position that I have held within the industry. And I think that it's really, really important for people to, like David, like you just said, learning out loud, because then that over time will combat suffering in silence.
I wanted to tie in, I feel like when you presented the conversation about the state of the industry, my immediate thought was like, I cannot have this conversation about the state of the industry without addressing the tipping system. Are you guys ready to get into it?
Yes.
Okay, y'all ready to get into it. So I've got my little spiel, right? So we had an episode with Ashton because she often talks about this, but this is an episode we had for season one where we talked about the tipping system. We also covered it in Resistance Serve. Like I've done other events where we talk about the tipping system. I want to bring up the tipping system because I have a question at the end of all of this. So the tipping system is formally a form of wage slavery, right? We're talking about hustling. We're talking about bustling in our industry. A lot of us are multidisciplinary people. A lot of us have had to do those kind of multidisciplinary moves because of the way that our industry functions with how they pay us out, right? Our income does not equate to our labor. And because of that, we're reliant on a system that was put in place during the emancipation in the United States, during the emancipation of enslaved African diaspora folks. And that was a part of making sure that we were not able to amass wealth. So with my whole little spiel, right, we're getting into like a little anthropological moment. With my little spiel, right, the tipping system is a form of wage slavery. Wage slavery is paying laborers or craftspeople such a little amount of wage that they have to continue to work under said circumstances and cannot amass an amount of wealth or resources to pause from their work or change their situation. In history, forms of wage slavery used in ancient cultures, right? We're talking about, these are usually economic systems that already have forms of enslavement. I'm referencing, ancient Greece, ancient Egypt, Mesopotamia, etc. These societies already had those kind of forms going down. But usually it looked like folks working as, as wage enslavers, a part of the wage slavery system, where they're usually getting paid either like in small amounts of money and then getting paid in beer or getting paid in wine or getting paid in lodging or semi-permanent like leased assets or whatever, or incredibly low wages. Sound familiar?
Yeah.
Right?
Sound very
familiar. Busting your ass at a bar and just being like, pizza day. Oh, but I get pizza, but I get drinks, but I get free Fernet all day and swag or whatever.
Yeah. I'm about to lose my shit.
I'm about to lose my apartment.
Yeah, literally lose all of my shit. But thank you so much for the cheese pizza.
Thanks so much for the shot of Fernet. Chef put out a bowl of French fries
for dinner.
Yeah. Oh my God, thanks for the French fries, right? Very familiar.
Yeah, and it's with a you're welcome. Mentality. So
with the understanding that the tipping system is a part of wage slavery, can you see bars or restaurant spaces continuing to use the tipping system and claim to be a safe space or a healthy environment?
I'm going to say something upsetting. Are you ready for it?
Please tell me.
Is a pig's pussy pork. Because yes.
Oh, I was not expecting that.
Because yes.
Slap it up, grill it, and tell me it's not.
They will continue to use the system until the tits fall off. I swear
David,
to fucking God.
David, your face was
well, very that.
I also don't think I understand how anatomy works. So I was like, wait, there's a lot I want to unpack here.
Are there lips involved?
Oh, God.
I'm sorry. But yeah. For real, though, I think that they will use it to no end.
Yeah.
And, like, I've always been for, like, not having a tipping system, but I've exclusively been a back-of-house person. Mm-hmm. So I've never been in a situation where I get tipped out for any reason, except for one time a group of porn stars came into a fancy restaurant I was working at, like, 20 minutes before it was about to shut down. And they ordered food very quickly, ate, and left, like, a $25 tip for every person who had to stay.
Love that.
At the, like, for every single person.
Our hospitality workers, exactly. They already knew what's going on.
Exactly.
They already knew.
So that's what I'm fucking saying.
Yes.
Like,
yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that...
How can we say it's a safe environment to work if we're actively... I mean, this is my biased opinion. Like, how can we say that we're that performatively while utilizing a form of wage... slavery.
Exactly.
What's going on?
Word.
What's happening?
Damn.
Opinions. How do we feel?
I'm not here for the system as it is. Let's get a new one. Put gratuity on all them bitches. Get everyone up to a fucking livable wage, hourly wage. Like, it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Justin.
But oddly enough, for those at the top, it makes plenty of sense for them, because therefore they are not responsible for guaranteeing you an appropriate wage, because they're aligning it to believe that it should be off of the generosity of people that are enjoying their establishments. I the whole time that this topic was brought up, I immediately thought of Ryan Pfeiffer of Big Kids Chicago. Hi, Ryan. You're amazing. I love a lot of the things that he said when he came to Terms of Service. But also, like, I love how he said it, because I actually fucking believe him. I actually believe that Big Kids is, like, committed to doing things differently and appropriately.
Yeah,
and I think that's amazing. That's absolutely amazing.
He's put a lot of, like, time and effort into doing things a very specific way. I've, like, watched him doing it in action.
Yeah.
And for me, it's like, it makes me feel a lot better about, like, how much I put towards him. And, like, I have a lot of gratitude for him in the sense that, like, he gave me a year's worth of culinary school for free while I was working at Blackbird underneath him.
Mm. Really quick, a whole bunch of people that I just really enjoyed just walked in. Hi, friends. Hi, hello, hello. Yes, continue.
Can I say something really quickly on that point? Is that I don't know where it was. I think it honestly might have been on the support staff podcast that they do, where they might have interviewed him as well.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're saying as you were speaking, in the way that Homeboy is, like, structuring Big Kids and stuff, I just feel like, yes, flowers to them for doing what they're doing. Also, like, also no tea nor no shade, but, like, it just takes an imaginative mind to be like, how do we make this actually equitable?
Yeah.
Like, how do I, as an owner, actually just step the fuck to the side and figure out what my employees need to live and whether or not my employees are invested in this business and should gradually work their way up instead of being a manager, which means nothing at all. Like, how about they actually have some equity or investment in the business? Or how about it's shared? I just feel like there are people that are doing it really well right now, and all it took was just a sprinkle of imagination. A panini. A kale patty melt. Whatever they got. Or some spaghetti stuffed in a fucking spring roll. Like, whatever they've got going on.
Delightful.
But it's like, just sprinkle your imagination into a different structure of economics for your fucking brick and mortar. And maybe someone will fucking, you know, Punch will write an episode about you to be like, oh, great, look at how equitable this space is. It's like, just take some imagination to how you want to make your space more actually tangibly equitable. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, people are like, oh, but the tipping systems hold our business down in this way. David, you talked about
you
that as a reference as
that.
Well.
Yeah.
Just being like, oh, but we can't find a new structure to make sure that we're all getting paid. It's like, if your business is sustaining itself by not paying people, then maybe you just need to have a little bit more imagination coin or some investment
right. yes.
or
damn
some
right.
loans
yes.
or some PPE or whatever to fucking figure out your shit
and
just
I'm
be
saying.
Like, pay yeah. people. What's happening here?
It's because they structured this entire fucking business on the like least amount of effort ever. Least amount of effort. They just want
so
to
like.
So
least amount, they're still using racist systems from,
so
from motherfucking
much,
1875.
I so much literally
nobody
just want to give a round of applause for that mic drop right there, Kassira. Like, that was just everything. Everything.
For real, though.
Everything.
Well, I mean, so wait. Yes. Y'all can clap because we have.
Yeah,
people.
We can
go
actually.
Ahead. Yeah, do that shit. Yeah. Yeah. We're over
oh,
here.
Oh, wow.
Just like, we're surrounded
wow,
by
so
people.
Yeah, you guys don't yes. see it, but there's 2,000 people in the room right now. Very popular podcast crossover
yes.
episode. Well, I'm going to. I disagree with everything Kassira just said. So, no.
Oh, no.
One of the things that I always go back to, especially when it comes to the idea of tipping, is I hear so many bartenders and servers pushing to keep it because these are people that are working in places where it really benefits them, and it's really easy to keep blinders on and think to yourself, well, as long as I'm surviving in it, I'm not going to necessarily consider anybody else because we're all out for our own, right? And
yeah.
to a certain extent, like, I go through phases where I'm like, listen, right now my top priority is to pay the rent, and so I can't be worrying about all these other things. But when you're talking about the tipping system as a whole or the industry as a whole or like what we're doing right now with the state of the industry, one of the things I always want to go back to is the idea that in a lot of restaurants, if you have a patio, if you're a rooftop space, a lot of the tipping system benefits you seasonally.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, I just know at the places that I've worked where I was receiving the tip minimum wage, yeah, it was really great in June. You know, it was mm-hmm. really great when it was just thriving and the bar is four deep and I am paying the bills and there then some.
But let's
but
not
then
talk
in
about
January and February when the restaurant can't come
God,
up with a
no.
single way to get us anywhere near where we were making then, I'm realizing, like, wait, if I have to plan my entire year's income around 2 months, then there is a problem there. Whereas when I was in a management position at this same rooftop place, I was like, oh, the consistency, it pays off. And then the benefits package that comes mm-hmm. with this is also sort of like extra compensation.
But that's what I'm saying, but not everyone has that luxury.
Right. And now working at a place where I work only 3 days a week, and it is a tip minimum wage, and it is what it is, like, I am already starting to plan ahead for a wait. With this place in the winter, I can already tell, is not going to be the tea. It's not going to be the place that's going to provide me my prominent mm-hmm. income. And for this last year, and we talk about, we're all kind of multidisciplinary, you know, hospitality folks here that have found ways to do side hustles and extra ways of keeping ourselves inspired.
Right.
Like, virtual classes this last year was great. Oh, yeah, that was a great source of income. And all of a sudden this June, as things are reopening, I'm like, oh, nobody's reaching out to book a virtual class right now. And so there's this element of having to plan ahead because of a payment structure that is very, very inconsistent. And with all of us doing some sort of freelance work or things on the side, I mean, how that has to play a part into this conversation
yeah.
of tipping systems, that people have had to sort of come up with extra ways to make income during certain...
Like
people,
what has that experience been like for y'all between like the inconsistency of tipping
mm-hmm.
and receiving tipping, or back of house not receiving tipping?
Right.
The inconsistency of trying to balance your budget during a tipping system or an inconsistent versus even just balancing your budget during freelancing and also blah, blah, blah. So I'm interested to fold that in there.
Go for it. You freelance as fuck, my dude. Get in there.
Dead ass.
Thank you. I literally feel that it has a lot to do with the lack of financial literacy in the industry.
Yes.
And that is not by accident. That is by design. It always seems to be a surprise when someone in the industry buys a house.
Yo,
snaps,
my dude.
How
the fuck did you do that?
How did that happen?
Where'd that money come from?
It's just like, what do you know?
What
do
you
mean?
I've been saving since I was 7 years old.
Just like, what in the world?
Bitch, I won the lottery.
I was showering this morning, and I was like, what do I have to do to win the lottery? Because
I'm just trying to suck some dick for like
$100. Mama, who do I have to do? Okay. Okay.
I was not expecting
we
that.
We are on the same page.
You know what? But since we're here,
by
I
the way,
we stay there.
No shame. So, like, yes, no shame in that whatsoever.
There
shame.
We go. Exactly. Yeah.
We'll do that one.
Yes. I really think that it's... Oh, I know that it's extremely important to hold your employers and those that you align with accountable to make sure that they are valuing not only your labor, but who you are as an individual, and making sure that it's extremely, extremely equitable for you to build your path of growth.
It's hard to advocate for that, though. I'm hearing you in that.
Yeah.
And I've had people reach out to me like in the past being like, hey, like you're in a manager position, or it seems like you have a lot of expendable income or whatever, and been like, how do I ask my boss, or you know, my boss in the industry in food and beverage for a raise or for this or whatever? And it's like,
because
that's
part of that,
not an easy approach either. That's
no, because part of that is
right
that
there.
They may not even be advocating for themselves.
I mean, look,
yeah,
man,
so
look,
yeah.
I need to jump in on this one because this is a topic that I am very passionate about, which was that I wish more and more hospitality people were transparent about their how to negotiate
talking about it? You mean talking about your money?
And
please finish your sentence.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I think being transparent with each other about income and about... hey, I'm applying for management positions in this type of bar. You work in this style of bar. What does this look like? And it might, by the way, look very different from somebody who is, a quote-unquote veteran of the industry that's been doing it for 10 years plus, and somebody where it's their first management position.
Mm-hmm.
Fine.
Right.
But the ability to get the conversation rolling at least offers people a vocabulary that they did not have before. How you can be in an interview setting and... Kasira is always helping me with my sound issues. But to understand how to write a professional email, how to write a cover letter, these things are, again, elements that are not taught to us.
Yeah.
And it sometimes just requires another person who has done it just to be like, hey, here's how I learned it. Here's how I did it. And then it offers you the opportunity to be introduced to new opportunities within the industry outside of just working in a restaurant and bar.
Yeah.
Consulting work, freelance work. The second that somebody called me, they're like, hey, somebody just asked me to consult for the first time. I don't even know where to start as far as what to charge them. Is it by the hour? Is it by the menu? Right. And it's like to be able to be open and transparent with people is very important because... It's not like it's screwing you over by telling them how much you made at XYZ bar.
But
like,
that's
just tell
the thing.
Them.
Right. You're like not doing what the people before us fucking did. You're like, yeah, this is how much I made. This is like how you move forward in this industry. But older people aren't sharing that information with us because they weren't taught to share to grow. I learned to like prep and like teach people as if they're gonna take my job. Because that's what you want. I looked for people who wanted my job to train them because they're the ones that give a shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
I also have to jump in here.
Please.
I believe that the tide is shifting a little because I grew up in.
We ain't got no forks.
I'm 35 years old. And thank you, Travis, for bringing this food on this table. This looks great. Thank you so much. Just growing up with my parents always being like, you don't talk about money. It is something that, you know, it's not a thing that you should do. And that is part of the problem. That is absolutely a part of the problem because it's like, if you don't know what things are valued like in the workforce, you don't know how to position yourself as an asset. And I think that with people talking about money on a transparent basis, it's going to make a lot of businesses extremely uncomfortable. But who gives a shit? Because that's how I feel. And I just, yes, I'm championing this whole thing. I think it sounds awesome. So, yes.
Yay. As David was talking before we shift gears, as David was talking, it just reminded me of the fact that the hospitality industry, the food and beverage industry, is one of the only industries that remain where, I mean, other than like marketing and like communications, which like, I mean, you know, no tea, no shade. But one of the only industries that I'm actually interested in that you can step into without any prior experience. So I feel like from my exposure on who is like privileged and has a lot of upward mobility in the food and beverage industry have been people that haven't just started from like high school. Now I have like a line cook or whatever kind of job or a server kind of job. The point that I'm trying to make is that I feel like because the industry is something that anyone can step into, often the folks that have privilege and knowledge behind business savviness or how to communicate or how to advocate often are the people that end up becoming like the star tenders or the chefs or the owners, mm-hmm. because we have to understand that if this is an industry that you don't have to have any credentials to step into, you can step into it having no experience and not knowing the inner workings of like a corporate environment that could or could not teach you very well how to talk about money, how to talk about negotiating your price, how to talk about all these things. And instead, people walk into the industry and have to learn from the folks that are around them. And if the folks that are around them are also not with the tools and assets to be able to advocate and create conversations that are more quote-unquote business-savvy conversations, then we are inherently, you know, at a loss in or at a disadvantage in some kind of sense because it doesn't take our credential to come in and be like, oh, I know this, I know that, I know how to negotiate, I know how to advocate, right. I know how to do this. Right. The industry takes advantage of people and is actually functioning on people not knowing how to advocate and have knowledge how to have upward mobility in an industry where you can really slap some shit, you know? I almost said fucking, but like you can really slap some shit.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have someone coming straight out of high school doing this, doing that. And, you know, there's privileges in knowledge. There's privileges in exposure.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There's privileges in having other people around you that have money or own businesses or this. So you know how to advocate, how to ask questions, how to be like, oh, great, you're going to offer me a salary manager position. What about this? All the people around me have said they're being paid this. What about this income? What about this question? Blah, blah, blah. But if you're just looking for the up and you've never had that that mentorship or that privilege of understanding what it means to ask questions and have upward mobility, mm-hmm. then you're going to be taken advantage of.
Exactly.
And that's
mm-hmm.
the shitty part of our industry.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm going to cut it there.
I was like, but you just left us right there.
And this.
Yes.
That
precipice.
Yes.
But when we're talking about these like people with different identities and different experiences and
please.
How it offers them, like it just... different people have different paths in this industry
mm-hmm.
purely because of these identities that we have. It reminds me of a subject that Kassir and I talk about a lot, which is repackaging and how we're talking mm-hmm. about the state of the industry.
Yes.
So how does the industry repackage identities or expressions of identities and benefits from it without ever actually solving like any of the problems that we're trying to voice right now?
How can we have this conversation without libel?
Yeah.
Because there's like very specific things that we could talk about that would be the perfect example of like when this becomes a fucked up situation. But like, okay, for example.
Go for
please.
It.
In the beginning of the panini. In the panini, the beginning of the pandemic.
Oh.
I call it a panini.
Oh. I had no idea what the panini was.
Oh, yeah.
We've also referred to it.
Okay.
We've also referred to it as like a pterosaur, a ponderosa, just
anything that begins with a P.
A place where 600,000 people died because our healthcare system can take care of people. Oh,
so much.
I've literally ended
friendships with people because they're like, COVID isn't real. I'm like, bruh.
We don't need to unpack that here. We're talking about the state of the industry.
What
folds in, but like, heard that.
To the side. But like, okay, so
shit.
Damn it, I can't even remember.
We were talking about repackaging.
Okay, so yes, repackaging. So in the beginning of the panini, a bunch of people were like, "We like don't support Black Lives Matter," and we're like, "Okay, what? Okay, cool, 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 Google? No.
No, not cool. And not
we
cool.
quickly
no,
wiped them off the face of the
and
earth.
And I'll burn down your house. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, oh we God. Quickly were like, you're dismissed. But now, she's back. She's back. And she has, like, people repainting her doors. We have people ready to...
I know who you're talking
oh,
about.
Oh, yeah. We Oh, we know.
Oh,
you know.
Can we not say names?
We cannot say names.
No, so we're not. Oh. But also, what we're definitely going to do... What we're definitely going to do is really talk about this shit, though.
Yeah.
Because...
And they're just like...
Yeah.
They're not even really repackaging or rebranding. They're just doubling down on what the fuck it is happened to begin with. But in the eyes of the people, the community that they're servicing, they've rebranded.
Okay. Interesting.
Very yeah. interesting.
Let me say yeah. something about repackaging really quick, because there's a lot of different forms of repackaging, mm-hmm. right? We can talk about the very literal sense, where repackaging is taking something, putting it in a package, and selling it as something else, or selling it as this like mm-hmm. new hot item, right?
Right. Yes. Mm-hmm.
There's forms of repackaging that are cultural appropriation, where simultaneously a colonist culture will come in and devalue something, say that it's not worth anything if it's sold by those people, mm-hmm. and then proceed to take it, repackage it, and then sell it to a different Ooh. Population of people and say that it's valuable.
No, that never happens.
There's also a form of repackaging that's whitewashing, which is what happens yeah. a lot in the industry, Ooh. Where we have food, beverage, a type of pop-up or etc. that is not seen valuable until a until white
June.
Supremacy yeah. folds itself in there and right. says, now this looks good. Being a chef is valuable because I'm white and I have access and I'm making small dishes that don't feed anyone that have aerated puff
you
on
damn
top.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And everything's gravy and good. So there's a lot of forms of repackaging, but I think that the one that's ripe, palpable, and potent in our industry is the whitewashing of food, culture, beverage, and expression. And because food and beverage right. can be and is so intrinsically tied to cultural identity, the fact that repackaging is so rampant in our industry only gives light to the fact that, yes, our industry has an issue with whitewashing, repackaging, and white supremacy.
Yeah.
I mean, that wasn't really a question. It was mostly
no, it was no, a statement.
It was a statement.
I'm there
yeah.
with you.
Yeah, it was also a read.
It was also a read.
Yeah. yeah.
If
Absolutely.
You're a chef, if you're a white chef, I'm just a read, give up your what? Restaurant and I make space.
This reminds me of a comment that Nariba made a couple episodes back about fish sauce.
If you, like, just, okay, so, and I was just thinking about this.
Yeah.
Yesterday, I made, my partner and I made musubi for dinner, which is like, not a thing that is of my people or of his people. But
did you sell it?
That's what I'm fucking saying. And the thing is, like, when I work in places and I have to have a conversation with dudes being like, yo, you don't have to put fish sauce in every single fucking thing that you put on the menu because you discovered it and it's, like, blowing your mind. But, like, I want people to understand that
you
there's
went
a
on
way
one
to
trip. You went on one trip.
Not even.
Not
None
even.
Of these people okay. went on trips.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. None yeah. of these people went on trips.
Okay.
And they're yeah. out here trying to be like, oh, and talking about like all of these different factors of it. And it's like, it feels like if you talk about something without mentioning the race or like the intrinsic like ties that it has to an entire culture. Bitch, I ain't got no glasses on.
You're fine. We're just doing a little time check. You're all
yeah.
good. You're
I just
all good.
Like, I feel like if you're not talking about the main thing, then you're being racist. Like, if you can like explain an entire dish and not say that like very many parts of this came from like Pacific Islands, you're being mm-hmm. fucking racist. You're trying to like, mm-hmm. and I also don't like to say something's racist a lot because then it reflects on me as the angry black lady that's making something about race
well,
all the time.
Well, that's a white people problem because when
I
you
know.
Say something's racist, yes. White people are automatically, oh my God, I feel personally attacked. And it was
I
like,
know.
Did I say
and
your
then
name,
just like,
well, Jennifer?
To get rid of it.
Did I
we
say
have
your
to,
name?
Like, learn to be like, listen, when we're talking about white people, if you feel something, that's on you. you're feeling that inside
of you. And you should. Right. But it's like no one's targeting you.
No one's targeting you.
Be like me. Be numb to... I just feel nothing anymore. I am numb from the hair follicles down. Not since we are getting close to the end of this crossover episode. I want to ask for each of us to kind of go around with this one, which is we're talking about repackaging. We're talking about our identities and how we experience this industry and sort of the state of the industry. I'm curious about for each of us, what is a moment or a space that you have been in where you have felt like your identity was felt affirmed, where you felt genuinely welcomed? You're like, this is what hospitality
food,
feels like
space.
For me. Yeah, food and beverage space, where you're like, I, as this identity, I feel seen, I feel heard, I enjoy, I feel great here.
I feel about this space. Mm-hmm. I feel affirmed in this space.
Yeah. And it's Pride Month, so I always ask this to a lot of queer people, which is like, in Pride Month, where do you feel like you genuinely are like, yeah, that's where I want to be? Because everywhere I go right now, I see a rainbow flag, and I think Pride Month is exhausting, as I've said, mm-hmm. because I see mm-hmm. rainbow flags in the gym that I work out on. I'm like,
but like, y'all, like it's a rainbow
this,
flag.
This
sis.
Gym is so objectively homophobic for doing what they do here.
Right.
I don't see that as an actual show of support. So what is an example of a place where you have felt like your identity has been seen, heard, affirmed in a food and beverage space?
Sure. You know what? Yeah, I was having a hard time figuring out where that was because it never necessarily fired on all cylinders for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would have a great, like, you know, I'd be making a lot of money, but it's just like, I hated going there. You know, like, I felt like allergic from actually going there. And I have found spaces just through the work that I do that I love. And not trying to have this be like a very like on brand thing, but it's just
do
like
it.
Where we are right now, Blind Barber in Chicago, like it makes me feel as great as I am every time I've been here. And there's so many different identities that represent this location specifically, and it's not minimized, it's celebrated. And I just want to give them like a round of applause because like they just get it. They get
work.
It.
Work, Blind Barber. Yes,
yes.
God,
and
mom.
Our do wonderful it. Audience, if you could just give them a round of applause too, that'd be absolutely wonderful. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. Because
thank
no
you for
place.
Keeping the lights
on. Yes. Sponsorship dollars soon.
Yes, yes, but also it's interesting because I've never like I don't work here. I have never been truly fulfilled in a position in a food and beverage space.
Do you feel like some of that affirmation comes from you being in a position of power in this space and we're often in it? Like as if you were just a customer or, you know, I'm not trying to throw shade or whatever, but I have often felt affirmed in places where I stepped into and because I was facilitating or doing something or collaborating on something that I was inherently of value.
Wow.
But
yes.
I've been placed in a non-valuable space in this space, which I won't go into as well, after not being someone that was knowing someone. Mm. Do you know what I'm saying?
No Sade at all. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So it's not... It's not... that. It's just specifically in a place that I have worked.
Yes.
I have never felt fully fulfilled.
I feel same. Affirmed by people, by knowing people in bars that I go to and then going there, knowing the bitch and having a great time. But I also acknowledge that sometimes if I were to have walked into that space not knowing the bartender, that I would have not felt safe or affirmed or that someone had my back or that I was able to like pick it up.
When,
and I'm not talking about free shit. I'm talking about just like people knowing and appreciating my presence.
Yeah. When you asked the question, I literally froze because like nowhere that I've ever worked have I felt that like... that feeling of being like appreciated because even after the fact, I find out shit that was going on without me knowing. So like realistically, the only place that I've ever felt affirmed for like it being exactly who I am and working there was Hash. And
oh, interesting.
And, wow. And then that's the place that like really made me realize that I have to stop filling other people's cups, because they appreciated my knowledge. Mm-hmm. They appreciated how much information and experience I had it. They like listened to me and all these things, because mm-hmm. but it really came down to me having more experience than like everyone who was working there combined. So I feel like I was appreciated because I brought a lot of information to them about what they needed. And like, as being a person of color in a white space in a brown neighborhood, I felt like they were doing the work to make themselves like feasible and accessible to their environment.
Right.
And they were doing a lot of like outer work that made me feel comfortable being there, but also appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
It made me sad in a sense, because...
Yeah. Right, because you're the heavy lifter.
I was a heavy lifter. Even though I didn't go in thinking...
Are you essential or are you appreciated?
Right. I just had this epiphany that because I have never been truly fulfilled within the food and beverage space as an employee, that a lot of my work is like the journey to find that fulfillment.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Literally just like light bulb just went off. Be like, oh,
but
there it is.
Finding that fulfillment. Yeah.
On the flip side,
I would say that I feel parallel to Kasira in the fact that I acknowledge that when I am in a certain position of power, mm-hmm. when I walk into a space, I'm treated very differently than when when beverage director is not after the comma on my name. So, like, honestly, like 3 days ago, I announced this new position at a restaurant where I'm technically the beverage director, even though I'm basically serving tables and it's just a nice title they were willing to give, so it looked better on a resume. Mm. The amount of people that suddenly reached back out to me to be like, you know, we really need to catch up. It's been so long. I was like, oh, wait, so now am I cool again? Like, it just, it was a really uncomfortable, honestly, it came from both sides. It came from people that also are in some, it's not even like that big of a deal, but it almost feels like a social climbing kind of element of, mm-hmm. I want to be around those certain people because they will bring me to the other brand events or whatever that looks like. And so I made it really clear in
the caption.
We call
those social dragons.
Social dragons?
Oh, yes.
So I made it really clear in the caption that was like, hey, reps, ambassadors, folks that have free tickets to things, I'm good. Don't reach out to me.
No.
It's not that kind of place. It's not really a cocktail bar in the first place. So I know that you see the title and you think, but you have beverage buying powers. You now mean something to us. So it's like when I was in positions of those, sure, I felt affirmed in many places because people were like, yeah, we want you to bring in... I can't say names.
No.
I'm being so good.
We want to bring in this brand.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So,
because we know your position.
But but what you mentioned Hash, and I'm thinking like as an employee where I genuinely have felt the most satisfied was honestly my first restaurant job, which was IHOP. And it was and I think it's what I realized about this industry that I'm starting to come to terms with, and it feels good, which is there's something about these like quote unquote industry spots that are all about the craft and that are all about, oh, this is where all the bartenders go. This is where all the chefs go. It's like, it's just a lot of like circle jerk and a lot of trying to prove to the other bartenders how much you know about fermenting. And so at IHOP, I felt like everybody got along. Everybody had a life outside of working there. So when we were talking to each other, we were actually talking to each other about our life, our experiences. It wasn't like, so how do you do orange swaths? And it was like, oh, we're actually having real life conversations about...
These are my kids, this is my home, this is where I'm on my bike, I broke, you know what I mean?
And people, I felt like, were actually asking me about my life in a way where I thought they were genuinely interested. And I don't feel that as much when I go out these days. Yeah. I feel like it's these very vapid conversations about like, what have you been up to? It's like, it's just really surface level.
Yes.
And that was the place where I felt the most affirmed and I felt seen. And it was also just so many different walks of life working in one establishment. Mm-hmm. And I loved that. Yeah. Kasira?
I think that as someone that grew up in Seattle, in the Pacific Northwest, lack of black and brown, specifically black culture in the Northwest, I think that the places that I feel most affirmed in our industry are honestly spaces that are usually black as fuck, femme as fuck, non-binary as fuck.
Yes.
And people are just living their lives. They're dancing, they're drinking, they're serving, they're doing this. And it may or may not be a space like in New Orleans that's a super queer bar with a lot of POC, black femmes and non-binary people, or it might be a place where it's a rave or a DJ set, mm-hmm. and they happen to be having, like, on the low drinks or whatever. I just feel like, for me, the spaces that are most affirming, while removing those kind of hierarchies of, like, oh, I worked at this bar, now I'm valuable, or I know this bartender, now I get drinks faster, or something like that. With removing all of those kind of privileges, I feel like the reduced syrup of it all is queer femme space. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Queer femme black spaces where bitches are just doing their shit. Maybe we're having drinks, we're doing a roller skating moment. Maybe we're skating. Maybe we're just having a little parking lot pimping it moment.
Yes. Maybe we're just kicking it.
Who knows?
Maybe we're just kicking it.
Who knows?
Like,
but there's a space.
But But I feel like the place that I feel genuinely in removal of like privilege and this and that is really just like black femme and non-binary spaces where people are just having drinks, having a fun time, doing an activity. And I got a lot of that in New Orleans, and I got a lot of I get a little bit of that in Chicago. I just feel like more of those.
Working undercover for my boyfriend? Because he is trying to convince me hard to move to New Orleans.
I'm not going to convince you to New Orleans.
Kasira is getting paid as a consultant right now on this project.
I'm sponsored by your partner.
Yeah, so board of tourism for New Orleans right now. Okay.
Yeah, but that's where I feel safe. That's where I feel like shit is really fun and popping it. And I think back on the times that I've just had the most amazing fun. And it's just been like with a whole slew of black, queer, femme, non-binary people. Yeah.
Listen, all I'm going to say is that if you haven't watched Pause with Sam J., there's literally an article in a skit that they do at the end of it. And one of them is like, if you are a black, queer woman of color, you can do whatever the fuck you want.
I received that in the mail from the government, actually. Exactly. I have my I can do whatever I want card. And right next to my vaccine card.
Listen, people, my entire time in the food service industry was like, you have the confidence of like a middle class white dude. And I'm like, no, I have the confidence of a tired ass queer black woman of color and an immigrant. I'm tired.
Oh, well said.
I am tired. Yeah. That's why I'm funny.
I'm looking for that mediocre white privilege, but I got the confidence as someone that laid the whole foundation for the Americas.
Thank you.
You mentioned, you mentioned Roundtable earlier, and I'm just like kind of sitting here enjoying listening to a lot of what we're talking about, because I think a lot of what makes the state of the industry what it is because we're not having more conversations about how we can do it, and it's a lot of sort of just buzzwords that get reposted on Instagram
that are accessibility, accessibility, I care about this, and it becomes
marketing terminology.
Yeah, and there's no follow through, and I'm not saying that we're right now. Actually, we did. We just solved it, everybody. We solved.
Yeah, if you're not tuning in, it's solved.
It's solved. You don't have to worry about it anymore. But there's something about when we get to talk about it like this, and we all have very different backgrounds and experiences, and we all have different walks of life. I feel like it's just adding yet another, hopefully, like stone to walk on that makes it an easier path to figure out how do we navigate this industry? Yeah, yes. How do we improve the state of this industry?
Right.
And I just think it's cool to have these discussions. I think that hopefully what happens is that when people hear this, they're like, that is how I didn't know that there were words to put to how I was feeling, and this is another way to look at it.
Right.
And it's why we do the podcast that we do. It's why we do Terms of Service. It's why we do Anthropological. Mm-hmm. And it's why having a crossover episode is so cool, because we get to sort of experience each other's lives through this and talk it out loud and learn out loud.
I'm sad because it's gonna be over soon.
Like right now.
The end.
And I am like literally though, scene. I am 2 days away from my period, so I'm crying. That's a lot of information. Sorry.
It's not that much information.
No, a lot of vaginas bleed.
So. Well,
what?
Wait, no, what?
Shocking.
No, everybody, we can't even end it on that.
Yeah,
we will.
No. Yeah,
everybody.
But before we do the things that
please.
We know that we have to do, I think a great place to kind of like wrap this all up is it's the community of hospitality.
Yes.
And that is why I'm so excited that you have agreed to do this with us.
Yes.
Because
we are
stronger together versus apart. And I want to end it with gratitude and thanking you both, and obviously thanking Nariba here and everyone that has, you know, supported this journey so far, because we are...
These 2,000 people in the stands.
These
right
2,000 people in the stands make all that noise. Thank you so much. Thank you. Go nuts. Thank you. Thank you. Because it's like, it's the conversations are... You know, they come from the industry, but they also should be seen as educational topics for those outside of the industry.
Yeah.
To be mindful of how you are voting with your dollars, to be mindful of how you are navigating sensitivities when it comes to undocumented workers, when it comes to exhaustion, when it comes to all of these back of the house elements that are just hidden behind this curtain of elevation. And on that note, I am Justin Arnett Graham, and you can find me on Instagram at What's Biko. Thank you
and
so
this
much.
This is a girl.
Thank you.
Yes.
I feel like I just passed out and just like went in on that. But yes.
My name is Nariba Shepherd. You can find me at Ribaru on Instagram, and that's about it. I don't have social media, y'all.
I'm David Moore. You can find me on Instagram at DavidMMOR and on Grindr at David.
Oh,
no.
No.
It's true.
No.
That was your celebrating your shit.
Oh. I'm sorry.
You can also find me.
Can also find me Tinder, Bumble, blah, blah, blah.
Mama.
Yes. I mean, drop that Cash App.
Yeah, I got my Cash App and my Venmo.
My Venmo is the same as my
PayPal.
Insta.
You know what I'm saying? I'll cut you an invoice if you're listening to this. Thank you all so much. I happen to be the last person that's wrapping this up. My name is Kasira Hill. Thank you for listening. My Instagram name is Gemini_rising. And you can cut those checks, and you can cut them to Spill.
Yes.
ReadSpill.com.
Woo!
Fucking
yes, there
lay
we
it down.
Go. Absolutely.
Thank you guys so much for listening in. I appreciate you all.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Peace. Okay. Perfect. Awesome. Thank you. Thank you.